welcome to Write Through the Roof, the podcast for writers who want to improve their craft. I'm Madeline Diest, and in this show, I'm interviewing writers of all different types and asking, what's that one thing that took your writing to the next level? So come and join me and learn all the proven tips, tricks, and techniques to take your writing right through the roof.
And welcome to Write Through the Roof. And today I'm speaking with Icy Sedgwick. Hi, Icy. How are you going?
I'm all right. How are you?
Pretty good, thank you. So a little bit of an introduction about Icy. So Icy is a writer of dark fantasy, gothic horror and westerns from Newcastle. She teaches creative advertising and blogs about folklore and other weird stuff. And she's also a PhD student focusing on design in contemporary horror films. And her latest book, The Stolen Ghosts, is out now. Thanks again for sparing some time to have a chat with me today, Icy.
No problem. Anything to help.
Great. All right. So how I like to start off is a few kind of warm-up questions. So some kind of toe touches, some star jumps, I don't know, jogging on the spot. You ready for that?
Yeah. I must admit, exercise is not my friend.
So you write novels, you're writing a PhD, you blog, you write short stories. What's your favourite medium?
I think novels are easier because you can just keep going and you don't have to sort of think, oh, I've got to stop around about now. But I do think that there's something really nice about flash fiction. It's a while since I've written any, but I think just trying to keep to that 1,000 word sort of limit, but actually have like a point and not just be like a beautifully written scene that nothing happens in. I think it's more challenging and therein more fun, if that makes sense.
Sometimes those kind of ones actually take a lot more time than you think, because I'm more of a long form writer, and then I was playing with short stories and I was just like, wow, it seems like it's taking even longer than writing novels. So flash fiction, can that take a lot longer as well?
Sometimes, yeah, because you realise that what you've actually written, you're like, oh, I'm going to have to split this in two. And then you're like, then it's not flash fiction anymore. So it can sometimes take quite a lot of judicious editing to get it to the word limit. And then other times you've written what you wanted to say in 300 words and you just did it in one go. So it just depends on whatever the spark of inspiration was, I think.
Mm-hmm. And do you write every day?
Oh, I wish I did. Actually, no, that's a lie. Yes and no. I don't write fiction every day, but I usually end up writing something every day, whether that's for a blog post, for a client, if it's some copywriting work, or if it's fiction on my blog. So everybody strings words together, you'd hope, every day. but whether they're in the right order or not remains to be seen. But I do write something every day. And even if I'm not actually sitting down typing on a fiction project, I'm still thinking about it and working out where the plot's going to go and stuff. So, because I'm a big believer that writing isn't just typing. So I'm always mentally working on something, even if I'm not actually working. That's my excuse and I'm sticking to it.
That's what you're doing when you're like staring out the window.
Yeah, I'm working.
Don't disturb me.
Yeah.
So when you do get down to write, what's your writing fuel of choice?
Oh, I'm such a stereotypical writer. I'm going to have to go with coffee. I wish I had a cool answer to that, but I don't.
I'm waiting for the coffee promotions or the coffee advertising.
Yeah.
How do you have your coffee?
Oh, black, no sugar.
Oh, you're a woman after my own heart.
Yeah, everyone at work takes the mick out of us and they're like, oh, you always have yours black. And it's just like, yeah, but then I don't have a problem when the milk's gone off. I can still enjoy my coffee.
Well, that's not real coffee. That's just milk that tastes a little bit like coffee.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. As black as possible and, you know, as nature intended, really.
I totally agree. Cool. All right. Well, it sounds like we got to know you a bit better. So let's get a little bit more in depth. So how do you describe your writing, and are there any particular themes that you like to explore?
I think when I was younger, I always wanted to be someone who wrote like serious grown-up fiction. And then I became a grown-up and realised that that wasn't going to happen. So I think my writing can sometimes tend to... Like, reviewers have always sort of said things like, you know, it's a fun read, or it's entertaining, or it's a light-hearted romp, or it's whimsical. So even when I've written like some fantasy scene or a battle scene rather in a fantasy, or, you know, a shootout in a Western, it still tends towards, I guess, pulp fiction, that kind of pulpy adventure sort of slightly Indiana Jones kind of feel. So I couldn't write poor face literary fiction if I tried. I should try one day, and it would probably still come out all wrong. In terms of themes, I don't actively set out to write themes, because I sometimes think if you think of the theme first and then try and build the story around it, it can kind of feel a bit forced. But then when you step back and look at what you've written, you're like, oh, wow, I totally put that in there. I wonder if some English literature students in the future will notice this. And I guess mine's often about sort of somebody standing up against something that's wrong. And it's usually like an individual, but like, you know, in my Westerns, it's usually my hero taking on the bullies. And then in my dark fantasy books, again, it's people standing up against a regime that's bad. Which is ironic considering what's going on in the UK at the moment. I don't actively set out to do anything serious, but I think it is in there eventually.
So what draws you to Westerns?
Oh, it was an accident, as with most things that I do. I'd had an idea in my head for a long time that I wanted to write like a John Constantine Hellblazer type character in the Old West. And then Pulp Fiction Press in Brighton contacted me after reading some of my flash fiction on my website, and they were like, oh, wow, would you write a novella for our new series? And I got given 5 genres to choose from, and I can't remember what some of them were now, but I remember Western being the first one, and I was like, oh, yes, I can write a Western now. Excellent. And I'd done the history of the American West when I was at school, so I was like, yeah, this will be really cool. So I wrote The Guns of Retribution in answer to that call. Because the theme was it had to be about revenge or retribution. So I thought, well, I'll just name my town Retribution, because that's a totally Old West thing to do. And then it sort of went from there, and they ended up writing the sequel, which is more of a weird Western. So it was very much an accident. But it was sort of based on an idea that I'd had anyway. But it was an idea that I'd never done anything with and probably wouldn't have done unless someone actually, like, you know, kicked us up the bum and got us to do it.
Is there a still an active fan base for Western fiction?
Weirdly enough, yes. And they're quite rabid. And they're also... my Westerns are the books that have had more bad reviews. One of them really didn't like the fact that it was a girl writing Westerns.
Oh, dear.
That I was referred to as a young lady in the review. Whereas... No fantasy reader has ever commented on my gender or my age in a review. So I'm just saying. There is definitely a readership. And this is the weird thing. Like, every couple of years, Hollywood will suddenly bring out a couple of Westerns, because I know there's a new one coming out soon based on a book that I've read, The Sisters Brothers. So it's kind of like, well, why don't you make mine then? You can adapt mine. I don't mind.
It's here, come on.
Exactly.
You're open for movie deals.
Oh, definitely. I don't mind whoring my stuff about.
All right, so let's get back to your actual writing process. So what do you think is the one thing that's been most helpful in improving your writing?
I can't remember who it was, but that was years ago. I'd written a flash fiction, and somebody had commented that all of the dialogue sounded like me, even though the characters obviously were different characters. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's really true. So I then actively sat down and worked on improving dialogue. And in some cases, that was just things like eavesdropping more. And I know that, you know, that's supposed to be bad manners, but I call it research. And sort of listening to like how people talk in films, because obviously even in films, unless you're Jeff Goldblum, you don't sort of like and ah and pause the way that you would in real life. So I think it's quite a good way to learn how to write dialogue that, you know, because it's basically you take all the boring like pauses and, you know, at the beginning of a conversation, all the back and forward, you just don't need all that in fiction. So I think I spent a lot of time learning how to do dialogue, to the extent that one of my stories, a particular character, everybody who read it was like, oh my God, whenever I read his stuff, I hear Stephen Fry. So I was like, excellent, now people, it doesn't all just sound like me.
And another one where you're, oh no, I'm not watching TV, I'm researching, I'm learning about writing.
I'm working.
That is interesting about how you've gone from that sounding exactly like, and the person must have known you.
Yeah, thankfully, otherwise that would have been a bit
strange.
I think this is the thing, that when you do start writing and they say write what you know, sometimes you can take that a little bit too literally. It's a bit like, I mean, I never write, or very rarely write, romantic relationships in books, because it's just, for most parts of my life, I've either not been in them or I've not been in ones that were particularly inspiring, if that makes sense. So I tend not to write them, and because it's just not, I'd rather write like, you know, action scenes and stuff. So you know, obviously where I write what you know comes in there, the fact that I don't write something that I don't know. And I think dialogue's the same. You know how you sound.
Yeah. Although you're writing westerns and gun battles and stuff, unless you're, you know, also doing gun battles at home.
Well, if only. I think, you know, that there is a certain element of, you know, making stuff up as well that has to go in these things.
So are you trying anything new at the moment?
It's more actually process. So it's not like a specific, oh, I'm trying to improve action or I'm trying to improve this. It's more because I can't plot like in advance. I've tried it before and I find that once I've written out the plot, I sort of then think, oh well, I've written the book, I don't need to do the rest of it now, which is really bad. So I feel like I'm bored of it once I've plotted it. So what I'm trying to do is, but I can't pants either, because then I sometimes find I've written myself into a corner. So I'm trying to sort of do a combination of the two, so I know what the next couple of plot points are going to be that I need to write towards. And then once I get, so I've got a vague idea of the ending of my current book that I'm working on, and as long as I can get to that, that's fine. So I'm trying to sort of more work backwards from there. So it's like a weird hybrid between the two. So I still get to mix it as I go along, but knowing where I'm going, if that makes sense.
Yeah. It's really interesting. This plotter pantser thing is such an interesting question to ask people, because there's some people that I've spoken to, especially anyone who does crime, for example, who just like have meticulous spreadsheets and stuff, with all their red herrings and their clues and all of that. And then, yeah, like you, others who just write, who just think a few scenes ahead, and just to keep it fresh for themselves.
Yeah. You've got to be interested in what you're doing as well. And I think if you're kind of keeping yourself guessing, then you'd like to keep writing just to sort of see where the story goes and how it's going to end. And you'd think you'd know that in advance, but nah.
Well, sometimes you get a better idea along the way.
Well, exactly, particularly if you put something in that you weren't anticipating. Because the current one I'm working on, it's like I think I've changed the main plot. Like the ending's always been the same, but I've changed the how I get there about four times. And every time I've changed it, it's actually made it less convoluted, which is a good thing, because it was just like people's motivations didn't make sense. And then I was like, why am I even writing this? And now it's kind of like, oh, yeah, no, that totally makes sense in the context of the series. So I think it's a process of discovery as much as anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. So do you vomit draft, or do you carefully craft each word?
Oh, I just try and get it all down. But then again, I'm also different from everybody else. Everybody else, it's like you either do one or the other. And again, I kind of do a bit of both. So I'll kind of just like word vomit for a bit, and then I go back and edit that bit, and then I do the next bit, and everyone says, oh, don't edit as you write, and I'm like, I really have to, just A, to remind myself what I've just written, and B, because it's in the editing bit that I then go, oh yeah, no, and then this should happen and this should happen. So I kind of just end up with these weird Frankenstein's monsters where they've all just had bits stitched into them.
So it's this kind of iterative approach of like vomit and then fix and then.
Yeah, it's pretty much how I do life as well.
All right, good. So what writers inspire you?
Oh, Roald Dahl. I loved his books when I was little. Still love them now, actually. I'd probably have to say Neil Gaiman. I came to him relatively late, actually. I say that was still like 10 years ago. But and I remember sort of I started off with his Smoke and Mirrors collection. And it was one of those kind of things where you read it and you're just like, I might as well just give up because I'm never going to be this good.
I'd love to hate him, but I just can't because, you know. He's...
Exactly. I know he's not possibly not the most fashionable choice, and I don't write that kind of horror, but I still say Stephen King is quite, like, I've been reading him since I was 13 because I read The Shining because Joey was reading it in Friends and I wanted to know what all the fuss was about.
Mm.
And I read his collection of novellas, Full Dark, No Stars, and that one I was just like, oh my God, this is just the finest thing I'm ever going to read.
He actually comes up an awful lot. He was probably the writer that most people say when I speak to.
Yeah, because he balances being really popular but was also actually being really good, which, you know, some writers mention are no names who do books with colours in the title don't manage.
So anyone else? I interrupted you there. So
I don't know, because there's authors that I really enjoy reading, but whether they actually inspire what I do or not, it's sort of difficult to tell. I'm just having a quick look at my bookshelves now. Because, I mean, I'm a massive fan of Oscar Wilde, but I wouldn't say I'm necessarily inspired by him. I think J.K. Rowling. And I think the later Harry Potter books really did need quite a lot more editing done to them than was obviously, you know, took place. But I think just in terms of sheer world building and form and everything with sort of like folklore and legend and all that kind of thing, that's very much the kind of thing that I'm interested in. And she got like a whole generation of kids reading, so, you know, props to her.
Yeah, absolutely. Excellent. So, all right, so tell us a little bit about The Stolen Ghosts. What inspired that, and were you trying anything new?
It was originally started 11 years ago. I was on a family holiday in Scotland and we were going to Glamis Castle, which is like supposed to be one of the most haunted castles in the UK. And we happened to go past this road sign for a village called Fowlis Wester. And then just without warning, just this cavalier ghost appeared in my head called Fowlis Westerby. And I actually wrote a piece of flash fiction about him, which has since become the prelude to the book. Not a prologue, it's a prelude, because I'm pretentious like that. And so then the following year for NaNoWriMo, I was like, oh, yeah, I'll do that. What could go wrong? And then I wrote the very first draft of the book, and I'm not kidding, I've literally done a different version practically every year since. So I wasn't necessarily trying anything different, because at the time, obviously, I hadn't written any books before. It was literally the first novel I'd tried writing.
Mm-hmm.
But then I sort of went through the proper editing process with actual professional editors, sort of like last year and start of this year. So that was something different. because I then had the benefit of having worked on other books before, it meant I could inform this with more of that and more of all the story structure and all that sort of stuff I'd been learning for the last 10 years. I've got no idea how to describe it because I can't think of any books it's like. So, you know how everyone goes, oh, yeah, it's a bit like this meets that. I'm like, nah, not got a clue, sorry. So yeah, I've been calling it a supernatural adventure novel, although one of my reviewers referred to it as a supernatural mystery, which I think I prefer more. So it's a haunted house for, book, but where one of the protagonists is the ghost doing the haunting.
Okay, so you wrote it as your first novel, and then because usually quite often people's first novels, and I don't even know where my first novel is, on some dead hard drive somewhere, but you stuck with it all this time to refine it with everything you learnt.
Yeah, I'm nothing if not tenacious. There's other books that I've started writing and then I've just given up on, and then when I've gone back and looked at it, I'm like, yeah, I still can't remember where I was going with that. But I think the difference with The Stolen Ghosts was the fact that it was the first one that I'd actually finished as well. And I mean, at one point I remember cutting an entire chapter out and I can't remember what point in the book it actually went. So that shows how pointless that chapter was. And whole extra chapters have appeared, and, you know, obviously things have moved around, and obviously some of the characters have had to change slightly and so on, and things like that. So it's had a fair bit of work. And so it does look fairly different from the very first version. I do keep everything. I mean, I'm such a hoarder. And obviously Google Drive makes it easier to do that digitally as well. I've often had this where I've had an idea for a story and then not knowing what to do with it. And then all of a sudden, like a year later on a different project, I'm like, oh yes, that thing that didn't work, that would actually be perfect here. So it's like recycling.
Well, it sounds like that story just wouldn't let you go. You just needed to tell it.
Yeah, eventually.
It's taking its time. I know I've got a similar story where I tried it in a couple of different genres until I got it right. But yeah, similarly, it was just wouldn't let me go.
Yeah, and sometimes you just have to sort of work on it a bit. And I think as well, sometimes taking a break from it and then coming back, like I was, like a year later, or you're like, oh my God, so many flaws. And sort of like the distance kind of means you can be a bit more objective about what's actually wrong with it.
And hopefully see some good bits in it too.
Yeah, and that's the bit that you put more of those in and less of the bad bits. That's the theory.
Exactly. Okay, well, I might start to wrap up now and let you get on with your day. So what are you working on right now?
I'm currently working on book 3 in my dark fantasy trilogy. Originally, I envisaged it as like a whole series, and then I realised that actually, no, it literally only needs to be 3 books. However, I do want to do sort of spin-off books with other characters, so hence there will be a series, just not all with the protagonist from this one. And I'm probably about a third of the way through that one. And that's another one where I keep going back and tinkering and going back in and changing things and so on. So that's going to basically end with an absolutely mammoth battle scene, which is going to be so much fun to write.
Any plans for when you think that one will come out?
Oh, no idea. I don't really like setting myself, which I should. I should set myself deadlines. I want to try and go out sort of like early next year if I can, because book 2 came out in April this year. So I'd quite like to make it about the same time next year. Because obviously these people who bring a new book out every 3 months, I'm like, A, are you human? And B, do you have nothing else to do? And this is the thing, I'd bring books out more often if I wasn't also writing a PhD.
I find also that I need the time, like similarly to what we were just talking about before, about you need it. I need time for it to rest, to come up with better ideas. I'm just in awe of some of these people who can just like, you know, get it out really quickly. But yeah, mine need to marinate.
Well, I think everybody's does. It's just some of us actually admit that, and other people are like, oh no, it's fine as it is.
Shh, don't tell anyone. All right. Well, thank you so much for the chat. So if people want to find out more about your books and your work and your blogging on weird stuff, which is always really cool, where's the best place to find you online?
My website, which is just www.icysedgwick.com. And I should point out that Sedgwick only has one E. the number of times people have stuck an extra E in after the G and W. And then when I go, yeah, that's not how you spell it, they respond with, are you sure?
No, it's my own name. I'm not sure.
It is quite funny now, though, because if you just Google Icy Sedgwick and spell the name wrong, Google will go, did you mean, and actually correct people, which is awesome. Like, thanks, Google.
Google's on your side.
Yeah, but literally, like, all my social media links and my blog and everything's on there. So, because I hate it when people just list, like, a whole ream of links. It's like, no, they're just all on there if you want them.
Cool. All right, well, thank you so much for talking with me today. That's been really great.
Be my pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Right Through the Roof. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe or spread the word by writing a review on your listening platform of choice. And if you'd like to get in contact with me, please go to madelinedst.com or madeline_dst on Twitter, no apostrophes. You can find the show notes for this episode on madelinedst.com under the Right Through the Roof tab. And until next time, what are you going to do to improve your writing this week?